You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Dan Levitard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I have epically failed to cram into the Big Suey the way I wanted to. Every item of Back in My Day and Tony's Top 5 and Funniest Thing from the Sports Weekend. I failed because Adam Lefko made an appearance around here and we started talking to him too much about Philadelphia sports fans. But I have in front of me, as Ron McGill joins us, again, they've done another one of these surveys of which animals could you beat in a fight. And not surprisingly, Ron, Americans think that they could beat up animals more proficiently than Brits feel like they can beat up animals. And the one that I saw here, though, that I think people are overestimating their abilities with wolves and kangaroos. A kangaroo fight to the death. A strong human being is losing that fight, correct?
Yes, possibly. I mean, a strong human being has a chance, but the bottom line is a kick from a kangaroo can eviscerate you in one split second. It's a very powerful kick. They have very powerful claws on the end of their hind legs. It's not the biting, it's not the punching, it's the hind legs coming at you and kicking you. And if they get you in the gut, they'll eviscerate you. And that usually leads to death unless you can immediately get to a hospital.
Is the kick of the kangaroo greater than the kick of the cassowary? Does the cassowary have
No. Cassowary's on top of the kangaroo. I would face a kangaroo before I'd face a cassowary. Cassowary's bigger, heavier, and faster.
A kick in the animal kingdom better than the cassowaries or more deadly than the cassowaries?
I don't know about more deadly. I mean, certainly more powerful. You know, a zebra, a giraffe. I've seen a giraffe kick a lion and kill a lion. Kill a lion is coming after her calf. Kick the lioness, break her back, and the lioness dies. So the power itself of the kick, but that's an animal that, you know, is not going to kick you unless you threaten it, whereas a cassowary sometimes just is in a bad mood and is going to come at you. So I'd be much more frightened of coming across a cassowary that's not in a good mood in the wild than coming across a giraffe.
You saw a giraffe kick a lion and break its back?
Yep, a lioness coming after its calf, and she kicked to the side, kicked that lioness, broke its back, lioness died.
Does anything in the wild, like, traumatize you? Because I feel like if I saw that happen, I would be like, holy crap, like, this is wild.
It's why they call it the wild.
That is one of the reasons.
I mean, you know, I'll tell you what traumatizes me is watching animals suffer in the wild. You know, you see an animal, watching the Great Migration, watching these wildebeest cross the river, and everybody worries about the crocodiles getting the wildebeest, but more often than not, the wildebeest get the wildebeest. They're tripping over each other. They're breaking their legs. You'll see them running out of the water because of the adrenaline, but their legs are broken. The bones are coming through the skin, and they're running on three legs. You know they're eventually going to die. You hope that something like a lion or a leopard gets them and kills them quickly as opposed to a slow, miserable death, but that's traumatizing to me. When you see an animal suffer these long, miserable deaths, which quite often happens in the wild, you know, that's tough when there's nothing you can do about
it. How often will you yourself, because we've asked you before about nature, letting nature take its course, but how often will you yourself put an animal out of its misery because you don't want that for it?
I've done that only a handful of times in my life, and it's usually with animals that have been hit by cars. And I see them suffering on the side of the road, and I know there's really no hope for their recovery. And I will do what I can to end the misery as quickly as possible.
Roy, what do you have for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Yeah, there's a parasite that's going around wolf packs that are either forcing a particular wolf to become the pack leader or forcing it out of the group. Is there any other parasites that might affect other pack animals like that?
You know, Roy, I wish I was well versed in parasitology. I am unfortunately not. I mean, there are so many parasites. There's so many things that can debilitate animals. I don't know about a parasite that would enable an animal to become the alpha animal in the pack, because that would be an advantage, you would think, unless that parasite enables the animal to do that only to die quickly afterwards. But yeah, I wish I was well versed on that. I am not. Sorry.
Going back to lions and giraffes, because I have seen video of several lion trying to track down a giraffe and jumping on a giraffe's back. How common is it for the giraffe to be the prey of the lion?
You know, I don't think it's terribly common. I've only seen it 3 times in my life in my over 50 trips to Africa. And only one of those times were the lion successful. Yeah, and the other 2 times there were juvenile giraffes. There were younger giraffes. So, I mean, you know, it just depends. Depends where you are. It's like in Botswana, lions go after elephants. And nobody ever thought that would happen until you see there are actually a couple of prides of elephants, of lions in Botswana that specialize in killing elephants, man. Think about that. And they've mastered it. They've got it down. Whereas, you know, you've never heard of a lion killing an elephant in Kenya or Tanzania. But these animals adapt to their environment and what's available. And when you get hungry enough, man, you'd be surprised what you try to do. And then if you become successful, that's an adaptation that you can then pass on to your progeny.
I mean, what are you giggling about back there?
It's some Billy Saw on the internet.
Ron, I have a question for you. I have a question for you about Zoo Nights. What happens that goes on at Zoo Miami? I have a number of questions. One, are there animals that like holiday lights more than others, and are there animals that dislike holiday lights more than others? And what Amin was laughing at is we were looking at the schedule for zoo lights because we were planning on going together to see the zoo lights, Amin and I, right. And we saw that you have themed nights. You have a Star Wars night, you have a superhero night, and we were wondering if there's different things or if you guys just decided to add on, come in costumes to see lights at the zoo.
We just add on, basically. We add on different themes, so people come in their pajamas, they come dressed in Star Wars outfits. It just seems to be a little more sense of community for these people to come in there. I have not done that myself, but people seem to enjoy it.
So are there animals that like holiday lights and there are animals that dislike them, or are they all kind of like they don't really react to them at all?
I don't see a whole lot of reaction. I find that the tigers seem to be intrigued by it. I find the tigers are more active during zoo lights than they are during the day. So they come out much more active. I guess those animals inherently tend to be more nocturnal anyway, but they seem to be fascinated, not at all disturbed by the lights, but they sit out right on the edge of their habitat. They're looking at the people coming by and seem to be very, very relaxed. So, and understand zoo lights do not take over the entire zoo. It's just kind of the front portion of the zoo. So most of the animals are out in their night houses kind of sleeping, but we have a certain group of them that are out, and we have not noticed that the lights themselves cause any kind of stress to the animals.
Ron, I saw a video of a man dragging a beach shark off the beach and back into the water. One, we hear about beach whales all the time. I've never heard of a beach shark, though. So is that common? And two, how dangerous, how much danger was that guy in by doing that, by throwing the shark back in the water?
It's not common, first of all, and there is a certain element of danger to it. It's not as... You know, it's not like, oh my gosh, I would rather do that with a shark than I would with a crocodile or an alligator, because the tails of those animals are going to act like an arm and throw you into their mouths, whereas a shark really won't do that as well. But my big fear is once you pull that shark back in the water, that it can turn around and get you. Not that it necessarily would, but this is an animal that's hurt. It's disoriented. Those are animals that are dangerous. It doesn't have any malice in it, trust me. But again, the intelligence level would not indicate that this shark knows that you're trying to help it. Now, there may be some that do. I've never seen anyone get hurt doing that. I've seen a couple of these videos where people return these sharks into the water by pulling them by their tail and getting them back into the water. And most of them, you know, first opportunity, we just swim away. So, of course, there is an element of danger there, but it's not one of these things like, I'm going to kill you right away. No, I would not. It's not like you release a leopard into the wild, you open the cage door, and the leopard comes around and gets you, because that can happen and has happened quite often.
Ron, I don't know if we've asked you this before, but I was thinking back when you were talking about sharks and biting people, the old like Batman scene where the shark bites Batman on the leg and then it flies up on the helicopter and it's like way up in the air and then eventually like there's a bomb inside or whatever and blows it up. Is it possible for a shark to be holding on to someone's leg and be lifted up by a helicopter? Or I'm assuming the leg would just snap off, right? Or the shark wouldn't let go.
A shark could let go. The shark could let go, but it certainly has a strong enough jaw that if the leg does not come off, it can hold on and be lifted up that way. I mean, there are some reptiles, especially, that are known for that. Crocodiles, alligators will hold on. And they'll be dragged anywhere without releasing. So it's possible. I mean, it's a possibility that a shark could bite down, and if the leg does not come off, it all depends, again, on the size of the shark. A lot of animals do that, especially reptiles. I mean, when I was a kid, this is going to sound horrible. Please don't take it the wrong way. I did not know better. But, you know, the little lizards, the anoles lizards that we have here in Florida, I used to take them, and as soon as you grab them, they open their mouth because they want to defend themselves. And I'd put them on my earlobe, and they would bite down at my ear, and then I'd let them go, and they would just stay there. They'd be like little earrings hanging on your earlobes. And please don't go out and do that now, people. That was me as like a 7-year-old
My brother used to do that.
Yeah, we all did it as kids here in Florida because they're just holding on. Okay, they're just holding on, but then eventually they let go and they run away. But that's the kind of animal that will bite and hold its own weight with its bite.
Ron, the gentleman who fell off a cruise ship, based on where he fell, how long he was in the water, how surprised are you that he did not get eaten by a shark?
I'm not surprised that he didn't get eaten by a shark. I'm surprised that he survived, that he could tread water for 23 hours, whatever that was, in that ocean, which did not look like it was calm at all. I tip my hat to that guy. Don't know how he fell off the ship in the first place, but the fact that he could stay alive treading water for what they said was over 23 hours is pretty freaking amazing.
Do you realize how meaningless the reward is for that man to survive 23 hours at sea, emerge from the water, soaked and scared, and have you tip your cap to him?
Yeah, it means a lot.
It really does. Tip the cap from Ron. Yeah, makes it worth it.
I've got a couple of questions based on some of the other things you said. The strongest jaw in the animal kingdom belongs to blank.
I believe it's a crocodile, saltwater crocodile.
The animals most likely to know that you're trying to help them as a human being when they're in suffering. Is it all going to be the smarter ones?
It's going to be the smarter ones, Dan. I mean, otherwise, most animals, their instinct is to protect themselves. You know, generally speaking, an animal that's not very intelligent is not very social. Very social animals tend to, I think, understand aid, but also their instinct is to defend themselves because, you know, it's not like they go out and play with cross species. When it's another species, it's not because it wants to be your friend. Now, of course, there are exceptions to this. We've all heard the tale of the antelope befriending the lioness that protected this antelope, wouldn't eat it, protected the antelope, you know. So there's always exceptions. But generally speaking, intelligent animals, chimps, dolphins, marine mammals, they would probably tend to understand you're trying to help them. We've all seen those videos of whales and dolphins being released from netting and things like that, and how they seem to understand that they're being helped.
Do you have a story of helping an animal that you were moved by because you could tell the animal knew that you were helping it?
Not directly like that, but there's a story. There's a chimpanzee here. I think I introduced you to her when you were here, Dan. Her name is Samantha. She's a chimp that's 52 years old now. She doesn't like a lot of people. She really doesn't. But for whatever reason, she loves me. She's always very happy to see me. And she got pretty ill not too long ago, where they had to immobilize her to give her some medication. She was not coming out of the immobilization. They thought that she literally was going to die. And they called me. They said, Ron, if she could hear your voice, maybe it could make a difference. And I remember going there and seeing her down. And I talked to her. I said, Sammy, come on, Sam. Come on, Sammy. Come on. And she literally started going, and she got excited and she came out of it. So I think there is something that can be associated with animals that care for certain other people or other animals, that the presence of that person or animal can help them recover.
Ron, I'm not suggesting dog shows are rife with, you know, skullduggery and graft. But when I watch a French bulldog win the National Dog Show, it seems so arbitrary to me. How do you judge different breeds that have nothing in common, don't look alike? When you watch a dog show, like, does it seem legit? When the winner is crowned, you go, yep, that was the best dog. Or is it totally random? I just have no idea how to watch a dog show.
Well, it's certainly not totally random. It's much easier to understand when you're looking at within the same breed, you're matching dogs against the same breed. But when you come to this best of show thing,
right?
Yeah, I'm with you, Greg. I don't know where they come up with that thing. And, you know, I hate to say this because there's people who really work really hard with their dogs and do amazing things. But whenever you got all kinds of judging and money and stuff involved, I find it hard to believe that there isn't some kind of outward influence there that might be guiding that scoring, so to speak.
Thank you.
Give me the example that you have, Ron, that you mentioned one, but interspecies friendships that you yourself have been like, I can't believe that that's happening. I'm stunned that these two animals are friends.
Well, in the Seychelles Islands off the coast of Africa, a hippo became bonded with a giant tortoise. They literally would never separate. They were next to each other. A tortoise and a reptile and a mammal. And they were like bonded. They would eat together. They would walk around together. That was one of those, you know, relationships that I couldn't believe. It was amazing to me.
Well, because the tortoise isn't particularly bright either, correct?
Absolutely. You're right. But they bonded to each other. It was after a storm or a hurricane. And I forget what happened. They were disoriented. They found each other and they just locked on to each other. You can look it up on the internet. There's a whole story about those guys.
Look it up.
A reminder again on December 10th, that is this Saturday, Ron McGill will be showcasing his wildlife photography. It is award-winning. It will be available for purchase. We are also doing a variety of things so that Ron McGill's substantive endowment could get plenty of money. And Ron McGill is unretiring his Sex and the Animals presentation. Hugely popular. It has been sold out as a Valentine's Day special for a long time. If you want tickets, mosslebitard.com is where you go if you want to contribute to his causes. Ron, we will see you on Saturday. Good seeing you again, sir.
Can't wait, guys. Take care.
Thank you, Ron.
The Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gatz is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's time for a self-check-in. How's your social battery right now? Is it drained or bursting with energy? Similar to how a battery stores energy before eventually running out, individuals with a social battery may feel a need to recharge or withdraw from social situations after a certain amount of time. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with work or social gatherings. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Maybe you drive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DLB today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DLB.
Don Le Batard.
Cody decides to give his opinions on things right when we're coming back. He started yammering about, don't you hate the phrase controlling your own destiny? Destiny can't be controlled.
Right. An oxymoron.
Stugatz. I fully thought you were going to go in with take the oxy out of it. That's what you are. I didn't say it. I'm saying that's something that Dan would say.
Oh,
no,
I see. Okay. Yeah.
I love you. You didn't say I love you back. You're mad at me.
Oh, that no. is, put it on the poll, Guillermo. Does Stugatz throw out I love yous only to get I love yous back?
Greg, I love you.
I love you.
Okay. Feel better now.
This is the Don Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Greg, Cody, are you ready to do Back in My Day? I promised it earlier. How are you feeling about this Back in My Day?
I feel unusually good about it, and here's why. It's bulletproof. I'm bulletproof today with this, and here's why. A prominent member of this show, arguably the most prominent member of this show, and his wife, personally suggested this Back in My Day idea. I'm going to say that right now. So if it sounds familiar, if it sounds like maybe I've done it before, nope, it's not on me. I'm just following directions.
You're taking a request.
I am taking a request.
Okay, this is very exciting. Yeah. Let's see where we end up with today's Back in My Day. It's been a while since we had one. Look at Amin. Amin is thrilled that this Back in My Day is making an appearance.
Yeah, I really want to hear what Chris suggested to him.
Let's do it.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Wallets. You want a good laugh on Christmas morning or wherever presents are unwrapped? Hand a gift to someone under 30 and watch them open it to find a wallet inside. The hesitation, the quizzical look. What is this mysterious bifold lump of leather, the look will say. You explain its purpose. Wait, what? They say. It holds actual photographs and old-timey cash money? I'm supposed to put a bunch of stuff in it so it's fat and then I sit on it? So my posture is out of balance and I get a backache? Who invented that, a chiropractor? What a horrible gift, Dad. Back in my day, a wallet was the perfect gift to give a teen or a 20-something you were trying to gently nudge into adulthood and responsibility. You carried a wallet. It's what you did. Black, brown, bifold, trifold. In went your folding money, driver's license, credit cards, and yes, family photos. The wallet was an especially treasured gift because of the rarity. Greg Cody keeps a wallet for decades. Currently, the old trusted friend I have under my left cheek is a black Guess brand trifold I've had since, I think, the late 80s. You don't think about a wallet. You can go days without opening it, but you reassuringly know it's there just in case. As an experiment, I checked the contents of my wallet to find a lone $20 bill, 3 credit cards, a debit card, a license, registration, and a AAA card. Cards from Home Depot, Duffy's, Panera Bread, and Barnes & Noble. A Marriott Rewards card, valid through February 2015. Also, a medical insurance card, 3 business cards I never hand out, a voter registration card they never ask for anymore, and 4 photos, including my wife from around when we got married in the early 80s. Wallets to me are portable scrapbooks, tangible evidence of one's life journey. A fat wallet was a status symbol, still is to the graying, dwindling army who make a sad pilgrimage to Graceland. If I could find my Wahoo McDaniel Dolphins playing card from Royal Castle in 1966, I'd stick that in there too. And then there's this in my wallet, because every self-respecting wallet should have a hidden gem, an artifact. Mine, my original birth certificate from the mid-50s, with a childish signature that hasn't looked like mine since I was 12. Millennials, and especially the Gen Z crowd, they're too good for wallets. They're letting the tradition of our forebears wither on the vine as the wallet softly weeps. The slaves to the digital era, the cashless tap-and-pay generation with their sleek and slim card cases and their photos stored in phones, are slowly murdering the iconic wallet. Its cherished place gone from the derriere to the dumpster. Bring back the billfold. Start using cash again. Store credit cards you never use. Have photos developed at the drugstore. Save the wallet. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was back in my day.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please. Bring back the wallet, yes or no. I mean, you seem to be questioning something that can be proven or not proven right now. You think that Greg Cody is lying.
Two lies told.
Wow.
Two lies told.
Only, one. That's all?
Lie number one.
Yeah.
How does your birth certificate have your signature on it?
That's a good question. Let me check. Mm.
Yeah. That's got to be wrong. It's got to be inaccurate. It's got to be somebody else's signature on it. But I think I think the second lie is about to be disproven because it seems like he might have it in there.
No, I do.
The second lie, this is absolutely false. No chance you were born in the 50s.
Yeah.
1850s?
That's right.
He is now looking for his birth certificate.
Here's my voter card.
Right.
I don't want to accidentally show my birth certificate on the air, believe me. Here it is right here. No, look.
Did you sign it?
Is it written in papyrus?
I'm going to show you my signature on it. Dan is my witness.
Hmm.
That's a card.
You can look at it, Dan, as long as you don't show it on the air.
What,
you can look at it.
Birth certificates were the size of an ID card back
in the day? It's laminated, though.
But, Greg, this is your Social Security account number.
Right.
That's not a birth certificate.
Isn't it? I thought it was the same thing.
It's your Social Security card.
I thought a Social Security card and a birth certificate were the same thing.
That you could sign.
Go sit in the penalty box. Amin is sending you to the penalty box.
No!
He is getting you out of here.
Who wants a business card?
You think that the business...
I'll take it. I got the number.
Birth certificate.
Don't hand them out.
And the Social Security card are the same thing.
I did. I thought they were the same thing.
Go sit.
I think they are the same thing.
Go sit in the penalty box.
You know what? I'm not certain I like fact checking on Greg Cody's back in my days.
Thank you. I mean,
you know, just let him do what he does. Let him say what he has to say.
Thank you very much.
He went too far with it.
Really?
He went too far with it.
Really?
Like, it's got to be suspension of disbelief, Stugatz. I want to be lied to kind of like... gently, like, oh, that's good timey, old timey stories. I don't want it to be something blatant where I'm like, no, that's not true.
Right.
I don't have your birth certificate.
It's a social security.
It was an honest mistake, though.
A full sheet of paper. That's what a birth certificate is.
It's my original Social Security card. So I misspoke. It's not a lie. It's a misstatement.
Go sit in the penalty box.
Wow.
Amin, I wanted to play for you some sound here. Trey Young has gone in and gotten into a back and forth with Zach Klein, a reporter from Atlanta. But before we get to that sound, can you just, your overview on Trey Young getting contentious about missing, he wasn't with his teammates, and he was just insisting on private things should stay private as he gets into a back and forth with Nate McMillan.
All right, so first things first, I thought the way he handled this exchange was excellent, and we'll hear it in a second. He was calm. He doesn't let his emotions get the better of him. He's firm, but he's polite. He doesn't get rude. He handled it perfectly, I thought. Now, the thing that is interesting to me isn't why he wouldn't answer the question or would answer the question, whatever. The interesting thing, Dan, is what would make Nate McMillan, who's a pretty even-keeled coach, arrive at the place where, ultimatum, you are either coming off the bench or you're not showing up to this game. To which Trae Young says, allegedly, according to the report, then I'm not going to come to the game. That's what's piqued my curiosity. What could push Nate McMillan to that place to deliver such an odd ultimatum? He could have said, either you're coming off the bench or you're not playing, in which case Trae Young would have showed up and worn street clothes. But according to the report, he said, either you're coming off the bench or you're not coming to the game. Your choice. And Trae Young said, I'll take not coming to the game.
You said he handled it perfectly. And the question that I have for you is, does he have a right to the expectation in 2022 private stays private when, you know, the season starts with Draymond Green punching Jordan Poole and them saying private should stay private? And I just don't think we live there anymore. If people have a morsel of information about you as a celebrity, I understand wanting that privacy. But in this case, does he deserve the privacy that he craves?
Dan, whenever stories like this happen, I have two minds going on, right? My one mind is the basketball mind, which says, yeah, you don't say anything. Even if something came out, you don't have to answer any of these questions, right? You don't have to answer any of them truthfully, but also you don't need to answer them. You can say, no, I'm not going to say that. This is something that's an internal issue and we'll handle it internally. The other mind of mine is the media mind, which is like, oh, give me juice. Give me things for us to talk about. I want to gossip. I want to conjecture. I want to pontificate. Like, so that's what's happening right now. But does Trae Young have an expectation of privacy? I guess nothing can remain private because someone's always snitching. But the reality is, he doesn't have to answer those questions.
Yeah, I mean, we're all grown men here, and there's sometimes we don't always agree. And I mean, it's unfortunate that private situations and private conversations get out to the public, but I guess that's what the world we live in now. But I mean, I'll just focus on basketball and focus on helping my team win, and that's what I got to get to refocus it on.
But what's public was that you not at the game, so why weren't you there?
Man, it's not you. It's not you at me, bro.
I'm serious. I mean, you're a leader of this team.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for people who don't know the full situation to understand it. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's a private matter again, and it made public, which is unfortunate.
And if it was stayed private, it probably wouldn't have been as big of a deal. But like I said, it's unfortunate. But my job and my goal is to win a championship, and that's all I focus on.
But you can see the perception, though, Trey. You are a leader of this team, and when you're not there to support your guys.
When you're an outside guy like you are, you don't understand in a private matter, in a private situation, you should probably stay on the outside. And like I said, it's unfortunate that everybody has to understand and know a little bit of the details that went on inside. But, I mean, inside here, we're all good. And I mean, if you got any more questions about that, then you can talk to somebody else about it. That's all I got to say about it.
Again, I respect what you're saying about the private of the locker room, the private of the practice core. We're not here. I guess it's just a public thing of you not going to support your teammates when you're healthy about not going on the bench. So where's the disconnect there?
If I was healthy, I would have been playing.
But, I mean, John was in a boot, and he was still at the game.
Yeah, but you don't know the full story. Again.
You wanna...
Again. No, I don't want to.
So that's just, there's more to it. If you're being healthy and just, I mean.
A private matter needs to stay private.
So one of the things that is happening here, first of all, the person who's asking these questions is a local sports anchor, WSB TV in Atlanta. I believe that's the ABC affiliate, right?
Who did a great job, by
so
the
this
way.
So this isn't a beat writer who's here every day, right? This is someone who parachuted in because there's a news story, which is Trae Young didn't show up to the game. That's why he's there.
I think it's harsh to say never. I mean, there are local sports reporters that are at practices semi-regularly.
Very rarely.
Okay.
Very rarely. Are they there like all the time, enough to be a familiar face to ask questions that are fairly pointed? The second thing is, I'm going to issue a tone fine because the tone of the questions reminded me of like the investigative report of the local station who, you know, ambushes a city comptroller in the public parking lot talking about, why have you spent taxpayer funds on trips to Vegas, right? And the guy says, no questions. He gets in his car and drives away. That's how he approached it. He didn't approach it because there's some other beat writers who ask questions. You can hear them saying, like, look, man, I'm just trying to get to the bottom of this. Oh, isn't this a bet? Like, when you got that bass in your voice, that was Trae Young's reaction. Like, wow, you're really chomping at the bit here. And I think that impacts what kind of answers you're going to get in that scenario, in that sort of setting. But then finally, yeah, he said 2-3 times, I'm not going to divulge what happened. If you want to know, you can talk to someone else because it's not going to come from me. At that point, the reporter is not looking to get information. The reporter is looking at me, Louie.
Uh-oh. The accusation has been filed. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. It has been stated that Zach Klein is a look at me, Louie.
Look at me, Louie.
Stugatz thinks he did a great job.
He did because, listen, I hate when players say you should stay on the outside. You're not on the inside. The facts are the facts. You weren't there. You're the leader of the team, and he's asking you why you weren't there. Yeah, we don't know the story. So tell us. Like, how bad could it be? Tell us the story.
Why does he need to tell you?
Stugatz thinks he's entitled.
So people can stop asking.
Stugatz thinks he's entitled to information as a fan. He is entitled to your privacy.
He's entitled to ask that question. There's no doubt.
He asked it. He got an answer. He asked it again. He got another answer. He asked it. At some point, Stugatz, he's just asking. He's not asking because he's going to get an answer. It's not like he's going. This isn't Law and Order where if McCoy just keeps yelling at the guy, he's all of a sudden like, okay, I did it, I killed him.
It worked in a few good men. I mean, it did. Few good men. It worked. Did, yeah, he just kept pressing away, pounding away. I mean,
what could be the full situation that we don't know about? When he says you don't know the full situation, there's something that exonerates him, but he wants to keep it private. It seems like the full situation might have explanations that would exonerate him or soften it. And he's like, no, I'm not doing that.
Because, and I admire this about Trae Young, because he believes, regardless of whether this is going to make me look better or worse by divulging this information, I am participating in this thing. It drives me insane, Dan, that all across this league, not all teams, but a lot of teams, it is common practice. Mike Ryan sneezed. Hold on, let me get on my phone. I got to tell somebody. Mike Ryan sneezed. No one said bless you. Why is it in our league, in the NBA, There is no shortage of people who want to snitch on everything that happens in that building. Why? Why?
You mean internally?
Internally.
Yeah.
Dude, I worked in that league. I worked for three teams. I worked for damn near 10 years. I was friends with beat writers. I was friends with some national guys. I never gave them anything because I was foolishly under the belief we're doing a thing here. And even when we don't like each other or what's happening, that's not for me to tell someone outside. For what? For who? So you feel cool? It's insane to me. So I applaud Trae Young for saying, look, even if other people don't respect what we have in this building, I respect it. I respect it. Even if my answer might exonerate me, that would make me a snitch, and I ain't going to snitch. So shout out to you, Trae Young. Huh.
A shout out and you applauded him. Both of those things better.
Put it on
the poll, please, Guillermo. On the poll at Levitard Show. What is the bigger honor, Ron McGill's hat tip or a me?
You survived that 24 hours, no sharks, and you come out and there's Ron tipping the cap.
Or a means applause and shout out to Trae Young. The higher honor. I can say to, and I'm pro-journalism, but I can say to Zach Klein, that was very aggressive. It's not that serious. Like, whatever it was, he showed up at the game, he didn't show up at the game, he's injured, he's not injured. There's a kerfuffle with a coach at work. You know, people have problems with their employers, with their friends, problems at work. I don't think any of us would like it very much if we walked outside and somebody was immediately there on a day I've snipped at Stugatz, or Stugatz has gotten mad at Mike, where Stugatz is
going to
a press conference. And after you've answered the question three times, old Zach Klein is still there with the fourth question. After he's hit you after the first one with, man, you're really coming at me? And Trae Young seems surprised by, hey, I'm used to like these soft questions. I answer it one time, it goes away. These follow-ups. You're being very aggressive, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, look, and again, I think it's because he made it clear I'm not going to answer that. So at some point, you have to understand, like, there's not an answer coming. So every additional version of this question, this same question you keep asking, is literally just to, look at me, I'm the tough journalist holding people accountable. It's not because you're actually going to get an answer. But then, here's the more interesting part. So this was on Rajah Bell's podcast on The Ringer with Logan Murdoch. They had Sam Amick, who's great reporter for The Athletic, and Rajah asked him, is there any sense of where the team falls on this? And basically made a comparison to Zach Wilson and Mike White and said, you know, I've been in both situations where sometimes it's a reflection on how the team feels about the coach, and sometimes the player will act like that and the rest of the teams are like, the rest of the teammates are like, nah, we don't F with that. Except Rajah actually said the F word. Sam Amick, I think the answer is pretty clear that the players, if they were picking sides on this, to be honest with you, they'd be on Nate's side. So again, I ask, what did Trae Young do to push Nate McMillan into a corner where he issues an ultimatum, either you come off the bench or you don't show up?
You don't know the situation. You want the answer to the full situation. Zach is trying to get you the answer to the full situation.
And you hate Zach for trying to get the answer to the situation.
You're applauding Trae Young.
Weird. Yeah.
You're out here applauding. You've been boxed in, my friend.
Yep.
You want the same thing Stugatz wants.
I want the answers, but I can understand if I end up at a brick wall, it's kind of dumb to keep knocking on it.
But also, you were complaining earlier about internal moles that reveal things as sources. So you don't want internal moles to reveal as sources. You don't want Trae Young to tell us. How are we going to find out the answer to this question?
What do you want?
Witty and Stugatz, if you guys were paying attention, you'd remember my whole speech with, I am of two minds, a basketball mind and a media mind.
You did say that. Wow. Yeah.
Pick a mine.
No boxes for me, Dan.
Yeah.
No boxes.
But Greg is right. Pick one.
Pick a mine.
Well, let's talk about Brazil.
Let's talk about that.
We have not talked about this. Mike Ryan has switched allegiances from the United States to Brazil.
He didn't have the United States coming out of the group stage.
He's also dressed cheering for Spain today.
Yeah.
While betting on Morocco.
Well done.
Four minds.
If you are a fan of the beautiful game, Brazil makes it so easy to be a front runner. It's just a joy. They're just better at this than everybody. They may lose, but it's just, they are artists.
Dan, I'm watching these games, and it's like watching cavemen grab clubs and hit animals over the head and then take it and just gnaw at it with their bare hands, uncooked.
Barbaric.
And then I watch Brazil, and it's like fine dining with linen and china, and here is a filet mignon, medium rare, and you take a slice out of it, and it melts like butter. That's what the comparison is. You people are savages. What you're watching savage play out there, and then you dare want to compare to the greatness of Brazil out there. You see that goal by Richarlison yesterday? He, like a seal, bounced the ball on his head 600, 700, 800 times.
Seal.
Then brought it down to the ground, and then you had this pinpoint passing between him and Thiago Silva, and bing, bang, boom, next thing you know, the ball's in the back of the net. And you want to compare this brute force, guy just kicking and running, like, we're playing football. Come on, man. Come on.
It's like saying that the Golden State Warriors beating the Oklahoma City Thunder by 45 and pointing at them and going, that's the only way to play basketball. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. Yes, in theory, everyone would love to be Brazil. That is what makes, like, the only version of the sport cannot be Brazil's. Otherwise, it wouldn't exist. We'd just be watching Brazil play against Brazil at the World Cup. They're the only team that can...
It
does sound awesome, to be fair. I would love for there to be a World Cup
just
of Brazil.
Brazils?
Yeah. Well, there have been arguments made that Brazil's backups could be a team that could also win the World Cup.
I mean, they
did
lose to Cameroon in the group stage. So,
okay, but yeah. anybody can lose any one time.
Right. But, solid. No,
but I mean, Brazil's ridiculous. They're incredible. And honestly, and I was talking to Amin about this yesterday, we haven't seen that from Brazil in actually some time in a World Cup. They've actually been a bit more of that caveman football that you talked about in previous World Cups. They've not always turned on the style and the flair, and it was really cool for fans of a certain vintage to see Brazil do that at a World Cup.
Mike,
rip someone apart and do so and like kind of laughing in the faces of the opponent.
But an easy draw, right, for Brazil? I mean, South Korea, Croatia, that's kind of easy for them, no?
I think so, yeah. It certainly is probably the weakest area of the bracket right now, and then they'll face either Morocco, Spain, Portugal, or who does Portugal play today?
Well,
Switzerland.
Don't overlook, like, there's a potential semifinal meeting with Argentina that should be incredible for Brazil.
Right.
If Argentina get through the Dutch and Brazil handles their business against
Messi
Croatia.
Watches Brazil and gets jealous, right? Because he's like, they all are like me. I want to play with them. I prefer to play with them.
I mean, Argentina have had players like that in the past, but yes, the current iteration of Argentina, like, they are
he's out
mild.
There with a bunch
they
of plumbers.
Play like a club team emblematic of where Leo Messi's played before. A lot of ball movement, a concentration on possession, and not just possession for possession's sake, but to do something creative, joyful with the ball at your feet. They play like Barcelona does, and that's not something that you typically see on the international level because you don't have these players long enough to build this system around them. They instinctively know where each other is going to be. Their backline is very organized. That goal that Richarlison had, I don't want to gloss over, that was a three-man game with two center backs that were advanced in the box. It was Thiago Silva, who's, how old is Thiago Silva now? 37?
37 or 38, yeah.
3700. Yeah. I think him and Greg
He's
are
been
the
around
same
forever.
You were surprised, you were inspired by the artistry.
Yeah, that Richarlison goal was insanity.
He's got
pure
the two,
insanity.
The two best goals of the tournament.
Yeah.
One was better than the bicycle
kick? Yeah,
yes.
Easily. The skill in this and the instinctual run. The fact that his two center backs know what he is planning to do, and what he is doing is dribbling it on his head for three times consecutively before he takes a deft touch with his feet and pass it off to Marquinhos, who then passes it off to Thiago Silva. These are center backs. This is your back defensive line.
It's a normally clumsy 6'4". You're just hoping they can complete a pass. And for Brazil, they have the skill of attacking midfielders on other teams.
That sequence was electrifying. I believe that was the one where their manager got in on the dancing celebration too, because it was so beautiful. It was. I think Witty's point is a good one. Witty kept hearing about how the Brazilians play the samba football, the jogo bonito, the one with flair that just drops everybody's jaws, but he hadn't actually seen it in World Cups yet, and that's the best display probably in his lifetime of Jogo Bonita.
Tyler Adams could never.
My brother...
Right, but what might be Brazil's undoing is someone muddying it up. To Chris's point, there's multiple ways to go about soccer, and you're over here pounding the table for it. That's the way that you win. They haven't won in 20 years.
Imagine that.
And it's not even always somebody muddying it up against them. And when they were the host nation, they got drubbed 7-1 by a team that plays an attacking style of football. So it doesn't always correlate with World Cup victories. So, however, that was electrifying.
This iteration is the best defensive side we've seen from Brazil in quite a while.
Yep.
Alisson is perhaps the greatest goalkeeper in the history of Brazil. They allowed five goals in all of qualifying, six if you include the Cameroon goal.
Yeah. They're in a tournament where they can be bounced, not surrendering a goal.
My brother's father-in-law is a man who is very serious, and I have not seen in my lifetime of knowing him a great deal of joy. On the bicycle kick goal, he was dancing in the living room and began singing a song because he was
Amin was doing that yesterday. He made sounds I'm unfamiliar with yesterday.
He was so moved by how beautiful that his country had represented him in that sport in a way that was so artistic that he began singing in the living room.
And you think Weston McKinney can do that for you? Get out of here.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.